Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there. It is race weekend once again, and if you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest episode of F101. And just like every episode, we're going to start off with the hot topics this week. And there's a little bit more to talk about than would normally happen in the second week of Formula One. Normally, it's a little bit quieter until about the fifth or sixth week. You got some races behind you. You got some teammates that may or may not be working out, new advancements, all that kind of fun stuff. So let us just dive right into it. The number one story that, for me at least, that's going to stick out and I think is going to have the biggest impact over the longer part of the season, it is definitely going to be that Lewis Hamilton has parted ways with his personal physio and advisor of 7 years, Angela Cullen. I do hope that I am saying your last name correctly. Reports from Toto Wolff and from people at Mercedes do say that this was a decision made by Lewis himself, and he wasn't advised in any way to change any of the working systems that he's got at Mercedes. For those of you who don't know who Angela is, besides just being his personal physio, he or she has been with him for the last 7 years. She is one of those personal advisors, would help him with anything, you know, any struggles that he would have on or off the track, would give him advice. They were like the bestest of friends. She would also take care of his dog on race days that he would bring to the track, so on and so forth. This brings, for me, to mind what is happening at Mercedes. They just seem to have a massive mental down spiral after the first race and how their W14 has been performing the last 2 weeks, including qualifying today. It's a very negative headspace there right now, and I don't really understand why it needs to be so negative. The car is not that bad. It's still qualifying in the top 10. You're still going to be, you know, most of the time close to the top 5. Granted, it's not anywhere near the Red Bull pace, and by that I mean they're about 3 seconds off, which, yes, in Formula One, time is an eternity, and you want to be much, much closer. You want to be 0.3, 0.3 of a second, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's not as horrible as they're making it out to seem. Toto Wolff put this massive article and massive, you know, apology out to the Mercedes fans, along with Lewis Hamilton, apologizing for, you know, the car, that it's not set up the way it's supposed to be, that they're not fulfilling their dreams to their fans and to their employees for being the number one team in Formula One, blah, blah, blah. It's only the first race, guys. Like, you got one race under your belt. You still finished in the top 10. Hell, you still finished, which is always a good thing. Look on the bright side. You're still learning from the W13 from last year. You need to take into consideration that it's a very, very long season, that you're not going to be champions 5 races in. Take your time, learn what you need to, and just have a positive mindset coming into this season. If you think the car sucks, the car is going to suck. If your drivers think the car is not worthy and it's not going to compete, then it's not going to be worthy and it's not going to compete. I would like to think that Lewis Hamilton's mind frame and everybody's mental set at Mercedes is a little stronger than what they're making it sound to be, that they're just bitching, whining, and complaining. And I mean, it's just ridiculous. Have some faith in what your engineers have done. Give it a couple races. Another article that came out the last couple of days, Toto Wolff said that the information that they had got from all of their diagrams and all of their wind tunnel times and all that kind of stuff gave them false information on how the W14 would perform. Unless you have absolutely messed with the software, and I'm not an expert in the software, I don't know what they use, but it seems to me that 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4, so on and so forth. Math does not lie. It's all how you interpret the math. If you think it's going to be fantastic compared to the W13 car, then it's going to be better than the W13 car. The 13 car didn't really come into play about halfway through of last season. So give this car a chance. You're not going to be coming out of the blocks a superstar like Red Bull is this season. I mean, Ferrari's struggling. Mercedes is struggling. Aston Martin's just nailed it on the head. So they're the only real team that's put, you know, a massive step forward. Mercedes needs to give it some time. They need to think positively. And this specifically goes for Lewis Hamilton now. He doesn't have his best friend with him every single day with the, helping him with the media and his mindset and his physio. So it'll be very interesting to see once Angela's gone. She is not going to finish out the season. She's just, that's it, we're done. She's not here for this weekend, so we're going to see how it really turns out for Lewis, if he can handle the mental crush, if you don't have your advisor with you, you don't have your best friend to just bounce ideas and or to vent off of. We're going to see if he can get that positive mindset himself, or if he's going to do a little bit of a mental breakdown, a little bit of a mental crash halfway through the season. Moving on, in qualifying and in practice this week, Ferrari was looking pretty good, especially in, you know, pre-qualifying, like they're doing their testing and they're doing their runs and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately for Charles Leclerc, they were having some control electrical issues. Essentially what it is, it's the electrical harness for your entire car. It tells your electronical, it tells your electrical components to do A, B, and C, so on and so forth. So you're only allowed two of these per season. Normally, these don't break down at all. Everyone's got faith in them. Nothing ever acts up. Well, not this season. They were having some issues just with Leclerc's car in the practice sessions and in the, you know, the warm-ups and getting their car tuned for this weekend's race. So they decided to switch it out. So that uses up one allotted. You're only allowed two per season. So they were on their second one when it came to qualify, or when it came to the practice session itself. Now, all of a sudden, through the first third practice day, I think it was the last practice day, Leclerc's just bombing around, and then all of a sudden, the entire car just kind of quits. It was diagnosed as an electrical control issue. Therefore, they have to put in their third allowed harness, I guess you could say, electrical harness into the car, which is one over their allowance. So automatically, we're starting off the season. Leclerc is going to get a 10-point grid penalty no matter where he ends up in qualifying. If he's first, he's 10th. If he's 10th, that means he's dead last. It's not, he's not guaranteed within the top 10. It's a 10-spot penalty no matter where he qualifies on Saturday. So this could potentially be, if he doesn't have a good qualifying day, this could potentially be a horrible, horrible weekend for Leclerc right off the bat. I hope it's not. I really hope that he is able to get a really good qualifying session in, and I hope that he's able to put in some serious lap times and just to stay in the hunt. Saudi Arabia is the next call, or is the next race. There are spots to pass, but it's not necessarily an easy place to pass. Leclerc sometimes is known for super aggressive passing. Sometimes he's known to just kind of know his role and just not move within that. So we're going to see what it turns out for him, and also sees what kind of mindset he comes into as well. We're going to go back to Lewis Hamilton for just a half a second. If you remember some of my podcasts last year and some of the controversy that was around with the stewards enforcing actual rules that have been like 10, 15 years old, you will remember that Lewis Hamilton was getting in trouble for wearing his jewelry while racing. FIA and Formula One statements or regulations state that you're not allowed to wear any jewelry during the race. Silicone is not considered jewelry, so some of the guys are wearing silicone wedding rings, which is totally fine. The reason why they're doing this is, in their mind, if you're wearing jewelry and you're in a crash and something happens that there's fire or, you know, something along that line, that your jewelry is not going to warm up and cause and get super hot and cause even more damage to the body. Lewis Hamilton protested, going that the nose, I think it's his nose ring that he has in, needs to be surgically taken out, and that he would not be removing his jewelry. He took a stand against the FIA and Formula One. They were going to fine him, then they decided not to fine him, and then they were going to fine him again after so many races, then they decided not to. Essentially what happened is that Lewis Hamilton stood up against the FIA, called their bluff, and he won. Well, we're back at it again this season. The FIA has put in a warning to Mercedes and to Lewis Hamilton, because again, last weekend he wore his nose stud. This weekend he will be wearing his nose stud again, and they're putting in petitions that, hey, he's breaking the rules. It's just the same old song and dance. Unless you're actually going to fine him for breaking the rules, don't put anything out there. Don't put in a protest. Don't issue a warning. Don't fucking do anything, because you're not going to do anything. Lewis Hamilton called your bluff last season. A lot of the other drivers were like, hey, does, you know, they were asking legitimate questions. Does silicone count? Why can't we wear this? And they couldn't give them a specific or good enough medical reason. Even the medical association, they're kind of like, yeah, it's a reason. It's not, you know, a definite very good one, but it is a reason for health and safety. That's the decision the FIA is standing behind, and I still think it's absolute bull. If they're going to fine him, they need to fine him. If they're going to punish him, like actually punish him, take him out for a race, make him take it out, just do something. Don't look like a bunch of sissies. But another warning, second race in, so we're going to see where this happens to play out. Third, fourth, fifth, 15th, 18th race. You never know. They might fine him. They may not. I don't think they're going to. I think they're just going to come to an agreement of some kind. They may fine him for the season and just leave him alone, or just let this situation just kind of lay and die. I don't think they're going to bring it up next season or the season after that, unless you see somebody who becomes a driver who's got a ton of face piercings, but I don't think that's going to happen. The next topic we're going to cover also deserves a little bit of a history lesson. So some of you may be aware that there is still the Russian-Ukraine conflict that's going on in the Ukraine. So when this started, I believe it was in 2021, I do believe, there were sanctions put on every single Russian sports team, athletes, anything to do with Russian sports was essentially banned. And we're talking across the entire globe, the Olympics, hockey, Formula One, darts, like you name it, it's been banned. At the time, Haas had a Russian driver, Nikita Mazepin, or Mazespin, depending on how you want to look at it, and his dad was the major sponsor. His dad is a Russian oligarch that owns one of the, if not the largest fertilizer company in the world. Okay, sanctions come around, and that all of a sudden Haas, obviously, they follow trend, they dump the Russian driver, they dump the Russian sponsorship. There's absolutely nothing to do with Russia, according to Haas, Formula One, it's all gone. Fast forward, we're in 2023 now, and 3 days ago, an article from PBS came out, and it was reported from several other reliable sources that some of the aerodynamic parts that Haas had been receiving as part of their upgrade packages and all that kind of stuff was being supplied by the Russian military. Now, reading into the article, it's not military parts. What Haas had done when they had their Russian sponsorship is that they had the opportunity to use research and development that just happened to be part of the Russian military complex to develop aerodynamic and carbon fiber parts. So it's not military parts. It was just a company that had to deal with military parts was also developing parts for their car. Sanctions come in. Common sense says you're not using those parts anymore. You're not allowed to. Article came out that Haas executives, including Gene Haas, were fully aware that they were still receiving parts from Russia for their 2023 cars. Yesterday, today being the 18th, so the 17th of March, Haas released a statement over Twitter, not major media, but we're talking social media over Twitter, and it was like three full scrolls long, and they did what any company would do in this situation. They denied all accusations. That's what this is now. Right now, they're just accusations. They denied all accusations that they were using any Russian parts after the sanctions and the bans had come into place. Now, whether this is true or not, I have absolutely no idea yet. This situation has kind of gone dark after Haas had brought out their statement. But realistically, what else is Haas going to do? Of course, they're going to say, no, we're not using Russian parts, whether it's true or not. Formula One has a very long memory. Formula One fans, executives, stewards, everything along that line, they have very, very long memories. So just the accusation that they're using Russian parts is going to make people think that they still are, and that what else are they using that they're not allowed to? Now, as of this weekend, I haven't heard anything that's coming up against Haas. They're still mainly focusing on the drivers and the track, so on and so forth. I think they're kind of overdoing it because I have never seen Haas go so hard on social media on just the positives. There's no negative aspect on this team whatsoever. And I do think this is because of this article that did come out. In my opinion, and I think, and this is just my opinion, agree with me, don't agree with me, but this is my opinion. If Haas was using and still are using sanctioned parts from a Russian company, I think that Gene Haas, and I'm not saying the drivers know, I'm not saying that Gunter Steiner knew, I'm just saying the guy at the top, it always falls to the guy at the top, he knows what's going on with the team, he really should, that I think Gene Haas needs to bow out gracefully, and I think Haas, the team itself, the Haas name, needs to leave Formula One if this is true. I don't believe that they should have a second chance. They knew the rules, especially the parts of the article that said that the accountants knew and that Gene Haas did know, that he's adamantly denying that there were Russian parts in the car. Now, if it is not true, that's fantastic that they're doing quite well. Second weekend in, they're not the bottom of the pool. They're still challenging for mid-grid and so on and so forth. But again, in my opinion, if it is true, if it comes out in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or even a month from now, because I'm anticipating this investigation will take quite a while, that if it does come out that they are using Russian parts, I feel that the FIA and Formula One and the president, literally, they all need to get together going, you broke the rules, and not just minor rules. This is a sanction against all Russian businesses, that you broke that sanction, and that you need to be, they need to be kicked out of Formula One. Now, whether that will happen, I have absolutely no idea. Only time will tell. Moving on to more race-orientated stuff. Coming into this weekend, there is usually some upgrades within the first couple weeks per team in the Formula One season, whether it's one team with one part, two or three, however it adds up, there's generally some kind of upgrades for, it's the Jeddah weekend, which is the name of the track for this weekend. It's usually a benchmark of what you will see for the rest of the season. Unfortunately for some teams, it's a little bit, some teams have more upgrades than others. Some need to have upgrades because of what happened the week before. Perfect example, both Ferrari drivers, Nick DeVries and Checo Perez, all had to get brand new power units coming into this weekend. Nick DeVries, who drives for AlphaTauri, didn't even get any practice in on day three as they had to switch out the entire power unit. You are only allowed, I believe it's five engines in the 2023 season. Sorry, power units. And I'm not talking power unit parts. This is like the entire actual engine power unit. I think if you need to replace your engines, both your end drivers, for a second engine for the second race, this is not boding well for the rest of the season. You have 22 more races to go, and you're already on your second engine. Now, that being said, the penalty for putting in more units than you're supposed to is just grid penalties and some money, so it's not a massive big deal, but I do think this does not bode well for both DeVries, I mean, Red Bull and AlphaTauri in general, like the Honda engines and the Ferrari engines. I don't think this is going to be quite a successful season for them. I do think they need to get their things figured out and not tinker with the engines so much. It seems to be the more these guys tinker with the engines and try to improve them throughout the season, the worse the engines actually get. So I think they need to fix the problem that has arisen and just leave them be. It's a long season. If you want to tinker with them, do it. The last quarter of this season when you can actually make or break your season, where you're not too far behind and you're not too far ahead in points, and that it would actually make a difference, not just blowing through your inventory. Speaking of upgrades, the list came out and all 10 teams have upgrades coming into this weekend's race. Some teams, again, have more upgrades than others. Let's say Alpine's only got one upgrade, where Williams is doing a total of five. It's not so surprising to see Williams have so many upgrades because they've got a new strategist, they've got more money in the team, which means they are able to upgrade their car to keep up with everybody else. The first race of the season, Logan Sargeant and Alex Albon did a really good job in the Williams. They weren't dead last, and that was before they got these massive upgrades for this weekend's race. I think this is definitely going to be a benefit for Williams. I do think that these upgrades are definitely going to help. Haas had two upgrades. AlphaTauri had one. Mercedes had two. Ferrari had three. Like, so everyone's got between one and three upgrades, and all of them are not necessarily like huge as in pieced upgrades. A lot of it is the front wing and rear wing. We did anticipate seeing a lot of upgrades to the rear wing just because they were tinkering with it a lot last season, and some cars got massively faster, some cars got massively slower just for the shape, the size. Some are a little bit wider, some a little bit shorter, some have a little bit more of a scoop to them, some of them are a little bit shallower. They're really working really, really hard on the aerodynamics of the, especially the back end of the vehicle, it seems. Most teams are spending, especially, let's say, you know, Alfa Romeo, they spent a ton of money and development time on the back end of the car. You get more downforce, you get more grip, you get more speed. The main upgrade that you may hear about in Formula One on Formula One TV that most teams have been upgrading is what's called the beam wing. So let me explain to you what that is. So when you're looking at the back of a Formula One car, picture this. We're going from top to bottom. On the top, you see that massive wing that's part of the car. Okay. As we go down the car, you're going to see the back end of the chassis. And then you'll see essentially is what that big thing is. It's the exhaust. That's what's next. So underneath and beside that, it looks like, if you're looking at the right angle, it just looks like another piece of body angle material. That's another piece of carbon fiber that's just on the car for stability. What that actually is, when you look at it at different angles, it's a smaller version of the wing that's on the top of the car. So what this does is that as the car is driving forward, you see all the fancy side shapes of the car, and you'll hear and you'll see how the wind travels over the car and it gives it downforce by pressing on the wings. What the beam wing is for is when the air travels from the side of the driver, it goes, you know, from front to back, past the driver, over the side pods, and it goes down underneath the wing. What this miniature wing does, what the beam wing does, is that it adds more downforce from the wind on the back of the car because it's scooped up. And what it also does, it's part of the brand new regulations that came in at 2022 for the shape, is that when that what's called dirty air or dead air hits that part of the car, when it hits that scoop of that little mini wing, it kicks it up. So instead of the driver behind you running into dead or dirty air as much as they did before, 2022 and 2023 season, because of this little bar, it scoops the air up and it gives the driver behind you the opportunity to get even closer. Almost every single team, and I hope that made sense, almost every single team on the grid has updated that beam wing. Now, you can't have a massive upgrade like you normally do just because of the space and the size and what it's actually for, because you don't want to add extra weight. So what a lot of these teams have done, and I've taken a look at this, is they're not all the same shape anymore. It's kind of like the side of the car and the base of the car. You'll see different shapes, different configurations. That's what they're starting to do with this tiny beam wing at the back of the car. Will it add time? Will it take away time? Will it actually help them? Only time will tell. And one last thing on the upgrade topic. Normally, you don't see so many upgrades throughout the season as you do within the first 5 weeks. So the next race, don't be surprised if I give you another update on every other team that's doing even more upgrades. I don't understand why, but the first three races, everybody seems to think that that's going to make or break your season. That they totally forget that you've got 20 more races. You've got 20 more weeks of racing, including sprint races put in there. And they think within the first 3 weeks, you're going to win or lose the championship. The points in 3 weeks, okay, you can be behind or you can be ahead. But it's not as big of a point differences they make it sound like. Yes, you can fall behind on the production of the car and the upgrades to the car, but you also have time to fix it. Now, you don't necessarily have the money to fix it later on in the season, but that's where, you know, some teams like Williams, they're doing a lot of their upgrades now, and they're going to see how it works later on in the season so they can figure out where they need the big upgrades. Now, teams like Alpine, Mercedes, Red Bull, hell, even Aston Martin, they're going to wait a little bit longer to do their major or multiple stepped upgrades in the second half of the season. They spend a little bit money now and they see how it goes because they know they've got a superior car to the back end of the teams, and then they're going to spend more money and more upgrades second half of the season. It all kind of depends on where your financial preference is, how much money you actually have, and if you actually need a lot of development on the car. And there you go, folks and fans. That is your Hot Topic update for the second round of the Formula One 2023 season. Next up, let's look at the qualifying and the race itself. Now let's get into the whole reason why you tune into this podcast, the whole reason why you listen to F101. We're talking about round one of the 2023 Formula One Grand Prix. We're talking about the Bahrain International Grand Prix, top speed of 327.9 kilometers an hour, lap record of 1 minute 31 seconds held in 2005, 57 laps, 15 turns, a distance of 5.4 kilometers a lap. It was amazing to hear the commentators. It was amazing to see these cars lined up. And I do have to say, it is one of the cleanest and fastest starts to a Bahrain Grand Prix that I have seen in a very, very long time. Coming from the straight stretch, coming into the chicane of turns one and two, generally you see, I don't want to see a lot of carnage, but I see a lot of guys diving down through the inside corners, trying to get those placements up the grid if they don't qualify very, very well. Generally, you see two or three cars bump. Sometimes they crash. Sometimes it's not a very good start to the Grand Prix. This, on the other hand, was the picture-perfect start, except for one little nudge, and it didn't really affect anybody. Fernando Alonso is on the right-hand side. He's coming up super fast. His partner, Lance Stroll, does not see him and swings over, takes a piece of the wing off. But this car that Aston Martin has built, it's, I don't want to call it a tank, but it withstood the hit. Nobody spun out. Nobody broke. Nobody got into any kind of pieces. And it was absolutely amazing. Both drivers did lose spots right off the bat. They both dropped down about two or three spots each. But that was it. It was a beauty to see. Max Verstappen started on pole. Checo Perez right behind him. The last thing that the grid wants to see is Max Verstappen on pole with nothing happening in front of him and Checo Perez defending behind him. They literally just cruised through those first three corners, through the first couple laps. It was amazing to see. It was a battle beginning to the end from third spot back. And it wasn't just, you know, the top, you know, it wasn't just from fourth to eighth that was battling back and forth. It was everybody all the way down from fourth all the way down to 17th. Tons of clean racing, a lot of passing, especially in spots that you wouldn't necessarily assume that you would do a lot of passing in Bahrain. We're talking corners 11 through 14, 1 through 3, like just the chicane areas and these corners where unless both drivers are absolutely on the ball and they're concentrating and nothing goes wrong, that's when you can make some of these passes. But generally, it doesn't go very well for the majority of the attempts. There's collisions, there's going off track, there's exceeding track limits, all this kind of stuff. That was not the case in this Grand Prix today. No drama, which is what I love. No red flags, no massive crashes, no crashes except for that bump at the very beginning. Just a lot of clean, hard racing, which I've stated before, but I cannot overstate this enough, just how good this driving was this race. Some teams doing better than other teams. Some teams just, they should have just stopped. They should have just stopped the qualifying going, you know what? It's not one of these races, man. I know it's the first one of the year, and I hope this is not how the season goes, but the first team that pops to mind is going to be McLaren. They didn't exactly have the best qualifying. Lando Norris out-qualified his rookie predecessor, Oscar Piastri, and Piastri's day, just weekend, just did not get any better at all. We're talking, he only made 16 laps before the new car that he had. It wasn't anything he did. It was a technical issue. So for those of you who don't know, to explain this technical issue, drivers do not change gears with the normal gear shift that you and I have. They do have a brake, a clutch, and a gas, but to shift gears is on the steering wheel, which means the steering wheel is a lot more complicated than the normal ones that we use. Even the higher end luxury cars that we as us normal drivers are able to use, it's a lot more complicated than that. So it's a lot, it's just basically a gigantic computer that you hold on to. And Oscar Piastri was not having a very good day with his first steering wheel. They did have to replace the steering wheel. There wasn't the proper connection between the shift gears in the steering wheel to the computer system in the car to change gears. It just, it wasn't happening. He was getting stuck in gears. The engine was having trouble shifting gears. It was a little bit of grinding. So they decided that we're going to switch out the steering wheel, lap 16, and that should fix the issue. So it's like a normal pit stop. It takes a little bit longer just because the steering wheel sometimes has to reboot. So they go into the pit lane, Oscar Piastri, he's like, okay, we're going to, they gave him a new steering wheel. He plugs it in and then the steering wheel like restarts and he's just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. And he's trying on the cameras, you can see he's trying to go through all of these systems, trying to get this wheel to work, trying to get the gears in rotation and in sync and all this and all that. And it was about 45 seconds into the pit when then they decided that, nope, your day 16 laps is your Formula One debut, that your day is done. And it's just, again, I can't help but think that they should have spent more time with these kind of issues figuring it out, opposed to, I keep coming back to it, adding those rotating advertisements. Like, it's not very often that you have to switch wheels, period, like steering wheels in Formula One. It's even less likely, and the odds are definitely not in the driver's favor for this to happen more than once every like 5 years. Like, you don't have an issue with the steering wheel like this, especially your backup steering wheel. So not very encouraging for McLaren. Like, they're down to one car within the first 20 laps. And then after that, there's a couple more DNFs that happened along the race, but again, none of it was collisions. None of it was anything to do with the drivers themselves. Well, okay, except for Esteban Ocon, but we'll get to that in a minute. Second driver that was out, lap 41 out of 57. So, and he was so close to finishing. He's in third. The Ferrari fans just are having mental flashbacks and PTSD of the 2022 season. Again, it was Charles Leclerc. A power unit failure. You could tell that he could still shift gears. You could hear it. He's shifting gears. He's trying to give that engine all it needs, and it just keeps getting slower and slower and slower and slower. Just the engine itself, just, I don't want to say died, because there was no big plume of blue smoke which would indicate something massively wrong with the engine. There was no flames. There was no visible signs of what had happened, but it was a power unit failure from the broadcasters that they had heard word that it was a power unit failure, but they don't know what's going on quite yet. He pulls off to the right hand side, really good spot to pull off in the racetrack where he was totally out of the way. So it was a yellow flag for, I think it was two laps, and the marshals just pushed the car off of the track. It was out of the way. They continued racing, but it was just, man, it was heartbreaking. Because Ferrari's coming in here just like last season, looking so strong, looking confident, and yet it's more mechanical issues that are letting them down. I know it's only the first race of the year, but if last year was any indication of what's going to happen this year by way of technical difficulties, this is not going to be a great year for Ferrari again. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I want them to do very well. But this is not a very good start. And the third and last DNF. So this one's a little bit of a one that needs explanation. So the driver chose to not finish the race, or it was a team decision for this driver not to finish the race. And we're talking about Esteban Ocon. Okay. So he had accumulated a bunch of time penalties, but it wasn't infractions against other drivers, which normally you don't see a whole lot of happen in Formula One. Normally it's obstructing somebody, unsafe release, hitting somebody, forcing them off the track, things of that nature. Like, dangerous driving penalties. And these were all self-inflicted, in my opinion. The first one comes with when you start the race, everyone does what they call their formation laps. So they get the tires warmed up, they make sure the car is working well, and then you stop in your, you know, your designated spot from 1 through 20. If you're in fifth spot, you stop in fifth, and so on and so forth. There's markings on where you have to go. There's also sensors where the car is supposed to stop so you don't cheat, so you don't roll forward, so you don't have an advantage when the race begins. This is fair play for everybody, which makes sense to me. It's part of the rules, and it works very well. Except that sometimes when you put the car in gear, so you'll go from neutral, they'll do their formation lap, they'll come to the box, they'll stop, then they'll put the car in neutral. Then they reset themselves, and then they put the cars back in first. Sometimes the cars kick forward a little bit. In this case, when Esteban Ocon put his car into first gear, the car shook, and it had like an eighth of a tire roll forward. Now, there's sensors in the boxes where these cars are supposed to start, and what everyone's thinking and what it looks like is he rolled far enough forward that he tripped the sensor and that he was too far forward, so that's a five-second penalty. Okay, that doesn't happen very often. You just kind of grin, bear it, and move on as much as you really don't want to. Now, you serve the five-second penalty. That should be it. You sit there. No one touches your car for 5 seconds. They do whatever they need to, and then off you go. Okay, that's very straightforward. That's how everybody does it. Except that Esteban Ocon goes in to take his five-second penalty. He needs a new wing, and he needs a couple tires. Okay, it's a pit change full out. The team knows this. So he goes in, and yet the mechanics start working on his car right away. So they don't give him that 5 seconds to sit there and then they work on the car. They just worked out right away, and it went over the radio that it was team orders that they're going to serve the 5 second penalty. So the stewards hear this. They know this. It's like, okay, so we're going to watch him sit in the pit lane for 5 seconds. Then they're going to work on his car. Then he leaves. Except that, like I said, the mechanics didn't give him that 5 seconds. Okay. So all of a sudden he gets his pit change and then he goes off and away he goes. Okay. So now he gets another penalty on top of the first one he has. His second penalty is now another 5 second penalty, which makes it 10 seconds for not serving his first penalty properly. Okay, so now he has a 10 second penalty where you can either race to the end of the race and they just add 10 seconds onto your final time, or you try this all over again, you go into pit lane and you sit there for 10 seconds and then you can go again. Well, on top of the not serving his first penalty properly, when he came into the pit lane to serve his first penalty, he was going too fast. So there's a speed limit when you go into the pit lanes. Now, this is for safety reasons for everybody else, because there's engineers out there. There's guys that are in just helmet and coveralls. It's for everyone's safety that you cannot exceed a certain speed limit. Esteban Ocon comes in already frustrated, pissed off, and obviously not paying attention, and he's over that speed limit. Now, they never said how far over he was. I haven't been able to find it yet, but essentially he was speeding in pit lane. So that comes with another 5 seconds. So grand total, he's got 15 seconds worth of penalties, and by the time this happens, he's at lap 43 of 57. If he takes, or when they add all 15 seconds onto his time, he's nowhere near the points. So lap 43 comes around, they let him know, hey, you've got another penalty for doing something stupid, for not paying attention. Your day's done. They decide to pull the car. So he's the third DNF of the first race of 2023. I think it was a wise decision to pull his car and to just let him end his weekend, because at this rate, it was only going to get worse. There is a rule where if you accumulate too many penalties in one race, they're going to show you a black flag. So a black flag means you're disqualified, and you really, really, really don't want that, because then it's points off your license. There can be potentially financial penalties for you and the team. If it's bad enough, it's constructors' points taken off of your team as well. So they just decided it's the first race of the year, let's cut our losses, and they just pull him on lap 43. The interview afterwards was kind of funny, because you could tell, like, hey, what happened? How was, you know, like the generic interview questions, and you could tell he didn't want to be there. His weekend was over. Give me a week to just recuperate, and I will come back, and I will do much better. I feel sorry for the guy, but totally self-inflicted. And that was the only real negative drama to the entire race weekend, which was fantastic. Let's cover some of the teams that I thought really did well. Mercedes, again, like I had said before, I think they were absolutely sandbagging, and they're not giving themselves the benefit of the doubt on how well their car is actually performing. It was a great car. It was super reliable. George Russell had a little bit worse tire degradation than Lewis Hamilton this time. Again, that's just driver performance. Some drivers are more aggressive. Some drivers are a little bit more passive or more defensive. When you watch the race, you could see why Lewis Hamilton had better tire management than George Russell today. Russell, I don't know what somebody said to him or what his mentality was or what he thinks he has to prove, but he is coming out of the gate hungry. He's coming out of the gate aggressive, fast, but still very, very smart. He's taking every single opportunity and every single inch that another driver is giving to him to advance the pass and just make a much bigger statement than he did last year in Mercedes. Last year was his learning curve. Hey, I'm at a new team. I'm learning where my spot is, just learning the new atmosphere and teaching methods. And hey, this is a proper team, that getting that mentality straight. And I think it paid dividends for him this year, especially. I mean, again, it's the first race. This is what my interpretation is, but he is going to be a menace for everybody else on the grid. He's going to be aggressive for the rest of the year. He is now officially, in my mind, 100% the future of Mercedes. If Lewis wins his eighth, great, fantastic, congratulations. But George Russell, in my opinion, is going to start winning races more than one this season, and he's going to continue on for decades to come. Just, he's grown up so much just from last year. And again, this is just the first race of the season. I expect to see him this aggressive for the rest of the year. I expect him to see challenge from Ferrari, or he will challenge Ferrari. He's going to outpoint and outproduce Lewis Hamilton. And I do expect to see him tangle with the big boys for Red Bull, just because I think just seeing the future from this race on, he is going to be that. He is going to be that good. I also see the rest of 2023 being very beneficial for Mercedes. I see them winning more than one race like they did last year. The potential they have in this car, if they start to think positively about it, because again, they didn't do that horribly in this car that everybody seems to hate except for George Russell. Take out the negativity, look at your stats, look at your numbers, because Mercedes is a numbers team. F1 is a numbers game. Look at your actual lap times in the first race of the year, where theoretically it should be the most unpredictable, where you should see the most amount of problems should be in the first couple weeks, especially in the first race, because it's the first race of the year. Everything that's new, you're trying out for the first time. You've got reliable data. You've got reliable speed. You've got massive potential for the rest of the season. They just need to think more like George Russell, going, hey, it's a lot better than what we had last year. Here's what we did well. Let's just move forward with it. Up until lap 41, Ferrari third and fourth. So they started on the second row. They would have finished in the second row for points as well. Until, like I said, lap 41, when Charles Leclerc had the power unit failure, Ferrari is looking strong. They're looking like the number two contender again this season from the first qualifying and taking it from the first race. They're still behind Red Bull substantially, especially in race trim. So qualifying, you know, they made it seem a lot closer than it was. From the first to the last was like 1.1 seconds. When you got to actual race trim, by the time the race was done, the winner of the race to the fourth place, which was Carlos Sainz, spoiler alert, was like 38.4 seconds. So they're still massively behind the eight ball when it comes to Red Bull with just their speed and whatever aerodynamic tricks Red Bull has. But I think looking at what the strategy of which they put in for this race was still a little bit off, but it was much better than what it was last year. And you can tell there is a different mindset when it comes to the team and the drivers themselves. It's a lot more of us when it's beneficial, but it's you and me when we're separated, which you can see the dynamic work in this race. I see great potential in Ferrari for their development for this season. I don't see them winning, unfortunately. I see them again in the top three. I still think they have a solid chance to be that second team in the constructors, right ahead of Mercedes. I don't think Mercedes is going to pass Ferrari this season. I just don't think by the time Mercedes development catches up to Ferrari, Ferrari's just going to be that much farther ahead of them. But they need to figure something out to catch up to Red Bull, because they're faster than everybody else, but they're substantially slower than Red Bull. So it all depends on how you want to look at it. Are they faster where they need to be, or are they slower than they have to be? Like, it's that 6-1, half a dozen of the other. I would love to hear from you guys, from Ferrari fans, definitely, to see your guys' take on what the 2023 season is going to look like and how you think Ferrari is going to go and what you thought of the first race. Again, coming from a Red Bull fan, I love Red Bull. They look ridiculously strong, as they should, but I think Ferrari, they're at that gray area where they need to either speed up a lot, or they need to decide that, hey, we're a second place team. We're just going to hold on to second place, and there's nothing else that we can do about it for at least this season, or at least the beginning of the season, and then see where they go for 2024. So comments below, let me think what you guys think, how Ferrari's going to go. At the same time, the only strategy I think they need to fix from today's race to next week's race is the fact that they double stacked the teams. So both cars went in for tire changes, and that did kind of come, it did come back to bite Carlos Sainz in the ass, where he pushed too hard to keep up with the Red Bulls and he killed his tires. So he finished lower than he should have, just because he was trying to keep up with a team where they realistically had absolutely no chance catching. Which brings us to Red Bull. I mean, they qualified strong. They finished strong. Perez and Max locked out the top two in qualifying. They started 1-2. And, you know, spoiler alert, that's where they finished the race. They never faltered. They are a very well-oiled machine. They didn't need to fix a whole lot from last season's car. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The only thing that I can see potentially going wrong for Red Bull is that they overcomplicate what they have for a car, that some teams may start to get a little closer. Let's say Ferrari comes up in the middle of the season with a massive innovation and they get super close to Red Bull. The only thing I can see is Red Bull kind of panicking and overdeveloping their car to screw up what they have now. But from qualifying to the first race, it's just the same old good stuff as last year. Super fast off the line. Fantastic tire management from both Checo and Max. Even when Checo was defending, he didn't blow through his tires even more than he did last year. Great tire management. They're looking like another beast for the 2023 season. Are they unstoppable for the 2023 season? I don't think so. I think that some team that I'm going to mention a little bit later might potentially give them a run for their money by the end of the season. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, that they still have all of these penalties that they have yet to apply when it comes to research and development time in the wind tunnel. So don't expect Red Bull to absolutely run away with the season. I do still think they're going to win, but it's going to be substantially closer by the end of the season, just because they don't have as much wind tunnel time and research and development time and a $7 million fine that all has to play into this season. So by the middle of the season, if not the end of the season, I think it's going to be substantially closer between the top three teams. You're not going to have a couple of 100-point gap from first to second, second to third, third to fourth. It's going to be, you know, double-digit points instead of triple-digit points. A very good surprise, I would say, with this race is Williams. Now, in my preseason episode, I said I didn't have a whole lot of faith in Williams, just because for the evolution of their car, they got better, but everybody else got even better than them. And I didn't have a whole lot of faith in their new rookie, Logan Sargeant, as the first American, just because he's kind of like the poster boy of American racing. And I didn't think that he had what it takes to be in Formula One, essentially. Yep, I'm eating my words as of the race today. Williams finished a surprising 10th for Alex Albon. Great for him. It's his fourth race that he's gotten points in since he became a Williams driver. And Logan Sargeant finished the highest out of all the rookies. He finished 12th. So both of these guys are really making me eat my words, which is great to see. They're developing the car in a proper way. It may take them a couple of years to challenge the midfield or the top of the team, but the car itself, surprisingly fast, surprisingly smooth. Both drivers were able to stay out of trouble, but they were super fast. They weren't lagging behind. Really great development for Williams. Like I said, everyone else just got that little bit better. If the drivers keep going the way they are from the first race to the last race, I expect to see Williams about 7th or 8th in the constructors. I don't see, from this performance on, I don't see them not scoring points from here on out, unless something drastic happens to the cars or unless there's a crash. They're the Mercedes sister team, so they've got the reliability, and they're going to, you know, exceed expectations for my 2023 season, I think. And I pose a question to all you fans out there. Will they become the best of the rest in the 2023 season? Will they be better than McLaren, Haas, and let's say Alfa Romeo? I can see them potentially by the end of the season really being in that hunt to be the best of the rest. I mean, if Logan Sargeant keeps on driving like he did today, he's definitely going to prove me wrong. He's going to do much better than the rest of the rookies, and they're going to get him. He's going to get the team the points they absolutely need. So for the second season of F101, I've added a new segment to each race episode. I'm calling it the story of the race. This is where I highlight, I think, the most important team or the most important thing that has happened in each week's race. And this week for me, it's going to be the Aston Martin story from top to bottom. They are, I don't want to call them the Cinderella team because it's been a long time coming, but the combination of Lance Stroll coming back from surgery and driving with two pins in his right shoulder and a broken toe and bruised ribs to place in the points for Aston Martin, as well as the phenomenal, and I mean phenomenal, drive and phenomenal weekend that Fernando Alonso has had with his new team in a brand new car. Let's go back to Lance Stroll. Let's start from there. He looks like he has definitely matured, even from last season to this race. He's taken the challenge of becoming a more mature driver, I think, to heart. When you've got the two-time world champion Fernando Alonso on your team as the number one driver, and yes, if you're an Aston Martin fan or not, let's just get this out of the way right now, even though Alonso's new to Aston Martin, he is the number one driver. And it looks like Lance Stroll has accepted that and accepted that he's got a lot to learn from Fernando. And it looked like that in his drive. Not only coming back with from all these injuries, but the way he drove today was intelligent when needed to be, aggressive when he had to be, but smooth from start to finish. He took chances when he thought it would be the most advantageous for him. He made a ton of passes today. He made very intelligent, aggressive moves which got him up into the standings. But he, at the same time, he didn't push the car further than he needed to in the very first race. If he feels like he has something to prove, I think he's learned that he's got time to prove it from 22 more races throughout the season. He can still be useful in the team that his dad owns. Now, that being said, when you go to Fernando Alonso, brand new team, brand new car, brand new circumstances, but a much more enjoyable environment, a much more welcoming environment than Alpine. He had nothing but issues when he got to Alpine a couple years ago. And the stark contrast when he gets into Aston Martin, they're asking him what he thinks of the new car, what can be added, what's going to work best for him, what little tweaks, what little tricks does he know from here, there, and everywhere. And it looks like they've listened to all of his recommendations to a certain extent. He's having a blast. He realizes what a good quality car is again. It's the dream of the first race. It's that I'm going to be competitive finally for the first time in 5-6 years. I'm not going to be in the mid-grid anymore. I'm not going to be fighting with teams that I know I can drive better than. And the car that Aston Martin gave him is definitely the car that is going to take him to the limit of that in the 2023 season. Again, intelligent driving from Alonso, pushing when he needs to, but not over exerting an overreaching for what the car should be able to do in the first race. And even though Fernando Alonso at 42 is the oldest driver on the grid, you can see that he's got a ton left in him, and you can see how much he loves to race when he has a proper car underneath him and a proper team to support him to win these races and to let him take chances and to give him proper strategy suggestions and letting him know that, yeah, you're still the number one driver here, but we work as a team, where Alpine was definitely the total opposite of that. Not only are you not our number one driver, we're going to let you know that, and you're not going to get, you know, proper respect for that. His tire management today was amazing, even when he was overtaking, and he had one of the best battles I have ever seen with Lewis Hamilton, the two oldest drivers on the grid by many, many years. Let's be honest here. Even with Nico Hülkenberg in, they're still the oldest by many, many years, showing what driving in Formula One in the new age should be. It was literally a clinic for 2 to 3 laps, maybe 3 to 4 laps, and it was absolutely amazing. They're passing aggressively and smart, and just the play back and forth. You could tell that both drivers absolutely enjoyed that part of the race the most. If other teams don't record those 3 laps and show it as a proper back and forth on how to pass and how to defend and how to lure the other car to where you want them to be, they're sorely missing out on a fantastic opportunity of what F1 driving is. And as a spectator, personally, it was the best part of the race. Even if you don't know a lot about Formula One, or you've been watching Formula One for years, it brought excitement and it brought a smile and it brought the intensity to the race that you know Formula One needs to be, and that now I'm going to expect for the rest of this season. Fernando Alonso, in an updated Aston Martin built to his specifications, essentially, in my opinion, by mid-season, so we're talking there's 23 races by race 11 or 12, just past that mid-season area, he's going to be in the top 5. Absolutely, he's going to be a pain in the ass to Red Bull, to Mercedes, to Ferrari, because there's no hiding what Aston Martin can do now. There's no hiding how good Fernando Alonso is. There's no question about, is he still viable in Formula One? Does he still have the intensity to drive? It's yes across the board. And it's going to bring up Lance Stroll too in his game. They're all going to be coming to that A level now. They're going to be challenging for points. They're going to be above the best of the rest when it comes to the Constructors series. And I'm going to say the statement now, the same as Red Bull. As long, in my opinion, for what I know, as long as they don't develop themselves out of the race, they're going to be in the race. And by that, I mean, find what works, but don't overdo it. Don't try to push it too far where you develop the car so much where it starts to get slower, where it starts to take you out of contention. The first race is amazing. There's absolutely no issues, no sliding, no oversteering, no brake checks, no skidding, no nothing. Take these numbers, take them in the next week, take them into the week after that. Just build on the basics and make sure you get it right. Just don't think too outside the box. But the most important thing and the most noticeable thing that you can see with the Aston Martin team is that both drivers are now having fun. A couple years back, last year before, when it came to Alpine and when it came to Aston Martin, you can tell Lance Stroll and Fernando Alonso were not having fun anymore. There was no smiling at qualifying. There was no smiling during races, not just, you know, if someone crashed into them or if it was a stupid mistake. It was that grind that neither of them enjoyed. With this car now, I can't press this fact enough that it's the proper development across the board. I think it's the best car that they've developed in the entire grid. I think they're going to make waves. They're going to make a lot of new fans, and they're going to make history in the most amount of points that they're going to get in a season. So now let's go through the top 10 racers. Let's see the finishing of the race. Top 10 racers, 1, Max Verstappen, surprise, surprise, starts on pole, finishes on pole. He finished 11.5 seconds ahead of the second place driver, which was Checo Perez. So not only did Red Bull lock out the front row in qualifying, they also locked out the front row 1-2 with the win. Then came Fernando Alonso in third, podium, his 99th podium of his career. Then Carlos Sainz, Lewis Hamilton, Lance Stroll, George Russell, Valtteri Bottas in eighth, Pierre Gasly came from the back of the pack with, you know, if you screw up, you get two penalty points, you're out for a race, all the way up to ninth to score points. And then to finish off, Alex Albon in 10th, scoring points for the fourth time in his career in the Williams. It's amazing to see. Constructors' Championship standings. This is the most mixed constructors' standings that I have seen ever, even at the beginning of the year, because it's normally your top three that you always get. Red Bull with 43 points, Aston Martin with 26, Mercedes with 16, Ferrari is in fourth with 12 points. Alfa Romeo is in fifth with 4 points. Alpine is in sixth with 2 points. Williams is seventh with 1 point. And eighth, ninth, and tenth are all tied at zero for AlphaAtari, Haas, and McLaren. The rookies for their very first race, I mean, I don't think they did that badly. Oscar Piastri obviously didn't finish. Wasn't something he did, though. Technical difficulties with his wheel. I expect to see him definitely bounce back and potentially over race next weekend, just to prove that he is worth all the hype and the drama and everything that happened before at the beginning of the season. Logan Sargeant, 12th in the Williams, making me eat my words. He's a lot better than I thought he was going to be. He's got a ton of potential. And my choice for rookie of the year, Nyck de Vries and the AlphaAtari in 15th. Not as an enthusiastic drive as I thought he would have. Yuki Tsunoda did out-qualify him. I think it's going to be a really healthy battle for AlphaAtari. Yuki Tsunoda's contract is up next season, and he's known for not being a very mature driver. So either he picks it up or he's out the window. And a little side note that I think a lot of you that follow Formula One may have noticed, and there's a ton of memes on this through social media, and I have to comment on this just because I think it's very apt, is that I'm calling these the best career moves for these two drivers, and neither of them are driving. So obviously I'm talking about Daniel Ricciardo and Mick Schumacher. Let's start with Danny Ric. He doesn't drive for McLaren anymore, so he doesn't have a seat. Okay, he's the third driver for Red Bull, which means he probably won't drive at all this year. But he's associated with a better team. He got paid out $18 million not to drive. And if he did drive this year, he would be stuck at the back of the pack in a very underdeveloped McLaren, which I think for him is the best career choice he's made. And who knows, he might be able to drive for Red Bull this year too. Again, Mick Schumacher. Haas, they didn't finish in the top 10. They looked okay, but not exactly a massive leap forward that I had predicted and a lot of people had thought, with them being able to reach the cost cap and being able to develop all of these parts. Instead, now he's the third reserve driver for Mercedes. So he's right beside Toto Wolff every single day. Toto Wolff knew his dad, Michael Schumacher. They've got that family connection. He's going to learn so much more from Mercedes than he ever will from Haas. So again, even though neither of these two drivers are actually racing, I think it was the best career moves that they could possibly make. And there you have it. That is the review for the very first race, the Bahrain Grand Prix of the 2023 Formula One season. Join me next week, the weekend of March 17th to 19th. It is the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix for our time, for those of us in Canada, especially in Alberta. Qualifying on the 18th starts at 11 a.m. our time, and the race on the 19th also starts at 11 a.m. I will talk to you guys next weekend.